from the time that they pronounced me dead was a good 45 minutes.
They cut my clothes and then they paddled my heart because my heart had stopped. And I could see people screaming and crying, but I didn't realize that was actually my physical body because I was somewhere else.
The only thing that I could feel, if you can imagine, absolute love and peace. There wasn't anything else to be felt.
I was greeted by people I had known in the past.
I'm back home again.
Incredibly safe and felt at home.
Welcome, welcome to Round Trip Death, everybody. And welcome to our very special guest this morning, Susie Pearl, all the way from Spain. How is Spain today, Susie?
Wow, as I see around the world all these really incredible weather situations, I'm really blessed to say that it's sunny and warm in Ibiza, but not over warm. It's just a good temperature for considering we're early days in January.
Having just set you up as being in Spain, and then people just heard your British accent, tell us a little bit about you so people know what's going on.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I'm from England, from near Cambridge, where the university is. I've always been interested in psychology and science and the mind, really. And I worked a lot with Dr. Richard Bandler, who invented neuro-linguistic programming. And from him and Paul McKenna, who I worked with for many years, I learned a lot about the mind and how we can use it and power it and connect with our feelings and words and emotions and use that to change our state. So I really had a career looking at psychology. And then in a different phase of my life, I was looking at, I had a celebrity PR agency and I looked after a lot of big names like names we all know, Madonna and the Spice Girls and Michael Jackson and people like this. So I've had this very colorful life, very stressful life, actually. I've just been writing my book about my NDE, and in that I'm doing a lot of storytelling about my career and my life. And I realized writing it now in my later years, I'm thinking, my goodness, how did I actually have all that stamina to do all that traveling around and being in Hollywood and going to all these amazing theaters and gigs and looking after these very, demanding artists. But I got to hang out with a lot of real geniuses of our time. And I'm really grateful. And I noticed that with these geniuses, there comes a lot of insecurities and anxieties about life when they are surrounded by yes people. And my job was to help them to navigate the world. So I've had an interesting time. And then I got really burnt out with all of that. And I decided to leave London, where all my network is and was rather, and came to this little island floating in the middle of the Med, which is well known for the mystical side of things and attracts shamans and healers and very interesting people, which was a great appeal to me to live somewhere like this. And I ended up in a forest here living very simple life after a very hectic life in showbiz and flying around the world, very busy. So it's a real contrast, and I'm very grateful for all parts.
That sounds awesome. Thank you for the intro. All right, near-death experience time. We're not going to beat around the bush any longer. 5 years ago, you were diagnosed with something really scary. Give us an idea of what was going on.
Yeah. So I was meeting a friend for coffee, as we always did in my local village, and I couldn't remember the way. And I got lost, and I bumped my car on the way. I ran into the lamppost coming out the drive, etc. And my neighbor said, there's something not right. She hiked me off for a bioresonance appointment, and they checked my brain and said there was something going on. I was subsequently diagnosed with a massive brain tumor, and I was given 3 weeks to live. That's obviously shocking news, but deep in my soul, I knew that I was going to be okay and that I was going to live to tell the tale. And it was really only me and my son who believed that I was going to get through. Everyone else thought I was going. What it did do was give me a reference point for learning to live, thinking I only had a very limited amount of time to live.
Can I just ask a question before you go on? That has got to be shocking. I mean, you think you're fine and all of a sudden you're told 3 weeks to live. What does that do to your, I shouldn't say to your brain because it's brain cancer, but to your mindset? Do you all of a sudden switch from thinking work to family, or just what happened internally?
Well, I'd spent many years working in the area of mind hypnosis and expanding possibilities and belief systems through my work in NLP and theta healing and things like this. So I had learned the power of being positive and keeping everything in the positive. I was driving everyone mad when I was ill by being so positive. I said, look, I'm going to get out of this. I know I am. I've got my magic toolbox. And I was thinking about visualization, affirmations, meditation, prayer, all of these protocols that I was familiar with. I was going to pull them in and use them to the max. And I believed that that would help me and get me through. Of course, my belief system didn't match most other belief systems around me. My family were pulling their hair out and going, oh my God, she's really lost it because she's not accepting that she's very, very ill and she's not going to make it. My son, who was young then, he was just turning into a teenager. Well, he was, you know, he was early in his teens and he hadn't got reference points for being a grown up. He was still really a child. And he, like I, decided we were going to be very radical about this illness. And when we checked in our, when I checked in my heart, I felt there's going to be a good solution here. And I actually had, when I was in hospital, I went to hospital in Ibiza. Then I was transferred to hospital in Cambridge, near where I grew up, my home, so that we could speak clearly the language. Because I had to make some big decisions. We had to make big decisions. And I didn't want a second language to get in the way. So I went back to the UK. And wonderful nurses and doctors there who were looking after me. And I really felt that I was in the best place I could possibly be. And I had faith and trust that I was going to be looked after. And as I was going into, one day I was having my third brain, the first brain scan showed this humongous tumor. And as I was going into the scanner, I remember praying and saying, why am I going through this? What is the purpose of this? I understand there will be a divine purpose to this. And I got very clearly downloaded into my mind. And I got this information. It said that you're going to have three scans. The first one is expect really bad news. The second one is going to be much improved. The third one is going to be really clear. And you're going to be fully healed. This is your storyline. And you're being given this because we want you to write a book and do a movie. There'll be a movie. And this is to really inspire people about what happens when we as humans die. And you're going to find out. And this was the information I was given. And then I went into this cylindrical tube, this MRI scanner with all the loud noises and the knocking to examine my brain for the first scan. And when I came out of that first scan, the doctor, I remember clearly coming into my hospital room and saying to me, this does not look good. You know, this is very severe tumor you have. And on my experience of 40 years in oncology, I expect you will have around 3 weeks. So I suggest get your will written, get your family here immediately, and we'll prepare a program for you, medical treatment. And I was someone who didn't take aspirin or any sort of pills. I was not interested in that. I lived a life very clean eating, very sort of anti-tablets and all this sort of thing. So the thought of having chemo, woof, blew my mind, you know, blew my mind. And I just thought, I don't want to do that. So I said to my family, I'm not doing it. And my brothers sat me down and said, look, we're really asking you as your brothers. We want you to have this treatment. So I said, okay, I will. I just don't want to. I will. And so I started on the chemo and lost all my hair and had a really severe, difficult time, as all cancer patients do. But deep inside, I had this amazing belief that I would get through it. When they gave me the results to the first scanner, I wasn't surprised that there was bad news, because I'd been told about this by this. It was a golden orb that came to me, and it felt like golden angels were surrounding me and supporting me.
At what point did you have a near-death experience? What happened that turned the tables? I mean, it had to have been something drastic.
Yeah. So I spent a lot of time in my hospital room praying. And I prayed, I said, I have a young boy. I want to continue my life. I've got a lot of things to do. I know that. I was a writer anyway. I'd written books about happiness and creativity and things like this before. So I said, I've got things to do. This is not my time. I really feel this is not my time. So I was praying and affirming that I wanted my life. I wanted to keep my life and be here. One morning I sat on my bed, and I think I was about to have some really heavy treatment. Oh no, I remember. I was in my hospital bed, the door swung open, and there were three men at the door who I was not expecting. This was my ex, who I was at war with, had been at war with, and my two brothers. And so all the men in my life who I had major issues with all arrived at the same time. And I thought my higher self just went into overdrive and went, oh my God, they're here. This is very serious. This is serious now. Now that these guys have arrived, things are getting serious. And it was that day that I sat in my bed and I began to meditate. And I felt this gathering of my spirit come, and I felt this whirring feeling. And as I meditated, I could feel this flow of my spirit, and it was being tugged at the top of my head, the crown of my head, to come out. And I had this feeling that my spirit was really on the move. And I got this intuition, Suze, you're going to die today, but it's going to be okay. So I got this information. I was, oh. So I came out of my meditation. I went over to the nurse's station, and I interrupted them early morning meeting. And I said to my favorite nurse, excuse me, can I interrupt? It's really important. She said, what's wrong? I said, I'm going to die today, and I want you to keep an eye on me because I know I'm going today. And they said, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. We'll got you covered. I said, yeah, okay, but I want you to really keep an eye on me today. So I kind of warned them about this, and they went back onto my bed, sat down again, and this process began with the spirit tugging to leave my body. I felt this tug, I can best describe it as my spirit was leaving, wanted to leave my body, and I felt it leaving through the crown of my head. I was very familiar with feeling what I was feeling inside myself through my years of meditation. And then I felt my spirit gather and whoosh out the top of my head, and I felt myself expand, and I went outside of my body. Then I noticed that I was looking down on the shell of my body beneath, whilst I was up expanding into the universe. And this is where it all got like a movie. It's not like we are here talking now. The quality of what happened was kind of very difficult to put into words, but I was free. I was free of my body that was very ill. My spirit was finally at liberty. It was finally free, and it wasn't constrained and confined to my body. And I went floating around, and I realized that something very unusual was happening, and I was without fear. I had absolutely no fear. I went traveling around this. It felt like being in a Hollywood movie with the stars and the cosmos, this infinite space. And I went on my little travels. I felt free. I felt at peace. I felt very blissful. I knew I was safe. I knew I was looked after. I knew I was out of my body. I had a lot of information coming to me. And at one point, I was given this choice. I was told, you have a one-time, I knew it was a one-time choice. Can't remember if they told me that or if I just had a hunch that this was the case. But I had an opportunity to decide one time, do you want to come back into your body or do you want to stay here? And if I had not got a son who I loved dearly, I probably would have chosen to stay because it was glorious. It was the most amount of freedom, bliss, unconditional love that I have ever felt in my life. And I didn't even have a reference point for how beautiful this feeling was. So part of me thought, oof, this is so nice. I don't want to go back. But the big part of me as a mum said, yes, I want to go back. I want to be there for my son. He's very young. I'm going to support him through his early years of going into being a man. And I want to be there. And I want to be there to be his mum. And I want to see him grow up and enjoy those later years. And that was a very firm intention. Eric, as soon as I set that intention to come back, poof, there's a white flash. I remember that so vividly. It was the biggest white flash I've ever seen. It was like being the closest thing I can compare it to. We had an electrical thunderstorm here this week, and the sky was lighting up with white flashes. It was this power and this intensity of a huge electrical storm. It was much bigger than this, but it was bright white light, which I read as God. This was a God light. And with that flash, I came back into my body. And guess what? When I came back in, I had a scan pretty much straight after. And the doctor came in with the news and he was shaking his head. As he came through the door, he said, I've got your scan results. I said, okay. And I knew because I'd already been told by these angels that I was going to have three scans and the third one was going to be clear. I knew to expect this would be clear. He said, I have been in oncology for 40 years and I've never seen this in all of my career as a doctor dealing with cancer patients. It's all clear. Your scan is all clear. And there is no tumor now. And the extraordinary thing is there's no scarring, which we would have expected from having had this tumor. There is no scarring. And it's all gone. I don't have any explanation for this result. It looks like a miracle to me. Although we're not in the business of miracles. I looked at him and I said, that's interesting that you're not in the business of miracles, because I am. That is my business. That's what I do. I do miracles. And this is one of them. And he kind of smiled, confused. He didn't really understand what was going on. I'd never heard of a near-death experience. I did not understand that many other people have been through similar situations as this. I'd never read about it, never heard about it. But I learned fast. You know, I started absorbing information about it. So there I was being told that I'm clear. I told my family and I remember my brother saying, well, it's a miracle. And he's a farmer, down to earth, doesn't talk about these kind of things. I don't think I've ever heard him call a miracle before. But it was clearly something that was not understood by the people around me. But it was, in my terminology, it was something that made sense. I just was thinking that the golden angels I referred to, they told me that I would be going through a storyline that I would be writing into a book. So as a writer, I was like, oh, right, I'm being given this real life experience that I can now write as a story and as a real life true story that will inspire people. That's my purpose. At last, I have found my purpose, and this is it, to talk about this experience and to be cured, healed from the most difficult kind of tumor. This is a tumor that was in the center of my brain, so it could not be operated upon because that would have killed me if they tried to do that. So suddenly here I was with a storyline that made so much sense. I can write about this. And it's only now that I'm starting to do that.
This is so cool. I want to just fill in a couple of blanks here. One is I'm interested to see the commonalities. One of the commonalities is the power of a mother's love. I have had so many people explain to me the choice, the decision that they had to make to come back. And a lot of people did not want to come back. But the many mothers that I have talked to who said, I knew that I needed and wanted to go back for my children is such a powerful thing. And they all have the opportunity to come back. Of course, we're not talking about those that had to stay for whatever reason. I can't speculate and don't want to go into that. But the other commonality that goes with making that decision is when someone makes that decision to go back, they don't linger where they are. They don't all of a sudden, oh, would you're going to go back, but would you like a tour of heaven first or something like that? No. The instant that someone makes the choice to go back, and I can't think of any exceptions to this, boom, they're back. Now, their description of how they get back into their body is different for everybody. What was the term you used again?
Yeah, it was a white, bright white light, and I was transported immediately. As soon as I decided I wanted to, as I set the intention, I'm going back, bam, I was back in my body.
It usually happens very quickly like that. You just said the word bam. I've heard the word slammed, you know, dropped, whatever. It seems to be a very fast process. But sometimes leaving the body, like you explained, can be a little bit slower and a little bit more of a process. I just find that interesting.
Yeah. But when I left my body, that felt a slower process, a process that I didn't know what was happening. I felt only that my spirit was on the move, and it felt on the move like this, kind of circular, like a spiral. And I know in order to feel feelings, they have to move. I guess the same is with this sense of feeling my spirit moving through my body and up and out. It felt quite a slow thing. And it was almost as if I had the warning that, okay, you're on your way now. And I could get used to this idea. It wasn't a shock to kind of suddenly whoosh, go out really quick. It was more of a slow burn. And it wasn't a burn, but it was more of a slow process, let's say. And I had time to get my head around the fact that I could be leaving my body. And I loved the fact that I had no fear about this, no fear at all. I always had no fear throughout the process. When I was in heaven, I had no fear. And when I came back, I certainly had, the best way I can describe it is that my program for fear got deleted. I couldn't find it. I couldn't find fear.
That's very interesting. Tell me, in your opinion, what is the opposite emotion of fear?
Love.
Were you feeling love?
Oh, yeah. I was emanating love. I felt in the angel realms, and part of me now still feels quite angelic and very heavily, very connected to these realms, even though I'm back here, firmly with my feet on planet Earth. I have retained an element of these higher realms in my soul, in my existence now. I that's present. And I look at situations now and I have great compassion and love for what's going on, rather than any sort of, let's say, more negative emotions of judgment and of guilt or of these kind of things. I have been replaced almost completely with this compassion and this unconditional love for all. I can't harm a fly. Literally, I can't harm a fly. I have to pick it up, wrap it in a big sort of thing, so it's got plenty of room to stay alive, and then I will let it go outside. It's that level where everything has importance and every living sentient being has importance. Yeah.
How else are you different?
I'm different in many ways. I am not the person that I was, and I found it hard to integrate back into life when I came back because I had changed so much. I looked the same. I had the same name. I had the same life, kind of. So people thought I was the same person, but I wasn't. My frequency had changed. My energy levels had changed. My interests had changed. And I can't be around people who are talking a negative game. I always found that quite difficult, but now I definitely cannot. And I cannot hang out in circles where people are saying mean things about other people, not interested. I will literally walk away because I can't be in that scenario. And so I curate very carefully now my environment, who I hang out with. I live in Ibiza, for goodness sake. There's partying, there's drugs, there's all sorts of stuff going on here. I am very careful about who I spend time with, what I spend my time doing, and make sure that I am not around negative energies. This has become extremely important. It's always quite important, but now it's absolutely 100% important to me.
Are you sensitive enough to it that if you walk in a room with that kind of negative energy or frequency that's different than yours, you feel it immediately and turn around and walk out?
Yes. I would describe myself as a leaver. I leave if I am not feeling it. I walk in many, many times. I walk into social gatherings. I will take a look around and I think, this isn't for me. This is not going to uplift my energy. It's going to pull me down. So I am off and I will just go. And most times I go somewhere knowing I might only be there 5 or 10 minutes and then I will leave. I don't drink alcohol because I'm aware of what that does to my frequency. And it's just not good for me. It's just not good. I don't want to change who I am in that way using spirits. And it's interesting that booze, heavy booze, is called spirits. And how that interacts with our own spirit. I don't smoke and I don't drink and I eat very carefully. So I curate everything that comes in. I can't watch scary, horrible movies. So it's, you know, I'm probably a handful to be around, but actually I understand the power of everything around us. And while we're talking about this, one of the things I noted very clearly is that I am part of everything. I am everything. I am God. God is me. We all are. We're all part of this thing. And everything has meaning. Everything, words, emotions, feelings are very powerful on a personal level and a collective level. And that everything, the impact we have is powerful. And we are interconnected with everything. We are all one. And so if I hurt someone else, I'm hurting myself. I knew that in theory before, but it was when I went up that I saw it in action. I saw this principle in action, that we truly are part of everything and that we have to really mind our behaviors and choices. And a good life is about making good choices. If something makes you feel not great, there's a reason for that. If you see a friend, someone you know, and they pull you down, it's good. I notice that and I pay attention to that. And I don't want to be around people who do that. So I make very careful choices. So you said to me, what's changed afterwards? I can't be around the people, some people I used to be around for this reason, because I'm very sensitive to the energies. So my friendship group changed. What I do changes. What I do in terms of work has changed and so on and so on. I was always quite a creative soul. And now that I'm really connected to these high, let's call them higher realms, or more expansive realms, let's call it that. I don't want to sort of say there's high and low. There's expansive realms. And that has powered up my creativity. I was a good writer before. I've written published books before I got ill. Now I think I'm just so much better writer and visionary and receiver of ideas than I ever was. And in writing my book on creativity, I talked about the fact that we can kind of jump up and bring ideas down. And many people do that often at the same time. So you find ideas have their time because it floating around in the collective is how I think about it. they can drop down to different people. Some people will take those ideas and run with them. Other people will choose to ignore it. So I find myself much more connected to the field. I can feel things. I can see things. I can anticipate things far more than I ever did. And that's responsibility.
Yeah, it does. Can I ask you a couple more questions?
Please.
You mentioned in coming out of your body and looking down at the, quote, shell of your body, I think was the term that you used, and that you didn't feel any fear. But still, wasn't that a little weird? I mean, didn't that just feel kind of strange leaving your body, or did it feel natural?
I don't know. I can't say it felt weird. I can't say I felt that was weird. I'm curious character. I was having fun with this. I was, wow, this is cool. I'm seeing all these things I've never seen before. Wow. That was the feeling I had, which is intense, almost excitement and curiosity of this is a tale. This is an amazing story I'm in. And I kind of knew, because of what the angels had told me, that I'm going to be given this extraordinary journey. I kind of knew that I was in this scene in my own life movie that was really cool. So I just wanted to absorb it and love it. And that's what I did. And I've learned that keeping that sense of lightness and curiosity and not being kind of troubled by it is a really good way to go. Because there's different ways you can look at this. You can look at this and go, oh my gosh, that is way too much information for one person to have to handle. And that's a big old story. Or you could look at it as, you know, I'm so grateful to have such an extraordinary story. I meet many people. I'm in Ibiza. I love coffee. I have a lot of coffee. That's the thing that I love. And so I sit down and I love chatting to people. And today I chatted to 3 or 4 people I'd never met before. And I was at the coffee bar this morning, and I chatted to, there was a lady, and she said, how long have you lived on the island? She was just like, I've just arrived. And I said, well, how nice. I told her my story. And she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm a writer. She said, what are you writing about? She was asking very specific questions. So I thought, all right, I can tell you. I said to her, this is what's happened to me, and I'm writing a book about it. And she was, wow, I've had something similar. And so we traded conversations, and we weren't talking about the normal thing that people talk about, which is, what do you get up to this weekend? Not interested. We were talking on this level of leaving your body and getting healed and having these extraordinary spiritual epiphanies. So it makes for a lot more interesting conversations, I think, and fun conversations with other people. So I love connecting.
You also mentioned feeling free. When your spirit was out of your body, you felt super free. Explain that a little bit more.
Yeah. So I felt this was an adventure with infinite potential, and that I was flying. It's like I was Superwoman, flying through the air with my cape, you know, just freedom. And there were no constraints suddenly. And I had felt very constrained. I felt constrained when I was in the hospital, for example, that I had to stay in this room. And I escaped from hospital 4 times because I couldn't bear to be told I had to stay in one room. So I remember unplugging. I had all these tubes coming in here. And so I unplugged them, got changed into my outdoor wear, slipped out the back, went into the lift, hailed a cab, went into town, into Cambridge. Did that 4 or 5 times because I didn't want to be constrained. And I love freedom. And so I escaped and I got caught a couple of times. And I said, great. I just wanted to get some fresh air.
Awesome.
And I actually wanted to get some good food because the food in the hospital, that would have killed me if nothing else, because it was just, no, there was no nutrients in it. So I wanted to go and eat. So I went to the local fantastic noodles bar with fresh vegetables and had fun there. So that was kind of fun, running away. So adventure and freedom, they're really important themes for me. And I got to enjoy being free of my beautiful body. You know, I got to enjoy what it is to be an infinite being, which I think at the baseline of all of us, that's what we are. We're infinite beings held for this lifetime in a container that's called the body. And the body gets older, and sometimes it malfunctions and we get disease and so on. And then when we die, we get released into home and become at one with the whole universe. That's the experience I had. And I'm so blessed to have had that experience. I feel it was the luckiest thing and the best thing that's ever happened to me. People say to me, oh, you poor thing, having this brain cancer, that must have been terrible. And I have to reframe it. I said, it wasn't terrible at all. It was actually, if I'm honest with you, the most wonderful experience of my life. And I feel very, very grateful. I'm a better, happier person for it.
What else did you see while you were flying out there?
I don't really remember seeing very much. I felt this expansive feeling of freedom. And I felt what it feels like to be in spirit form. And there's not, I know some people have relatives that they meet and so on. I didn't have that. I just had this feeling of freedom out of my body. And I also had a feeling that I was given a mental upgrade, an operating system upgrade in my mental faculties. So when I came back, I was kind of with a different upgraded platform. Mentally, which is fun. I've always been a kind of gregarious adventurer, interested in new things. I thought, you don't get more interesting than upgrading your own operating software. That is a good upgrade.
Susie 2.0. Okay, next I want to hear about the three angels. Tell me more about them.
Okay, so there weren't three, actually. It was about three scans. They told me I would have three scans. So I was in the hospital and I was praying for information about what was happening. And I felt this golden orb. Very clearly it was an orb. So in that sense, I have of an orb is I was surrounded by golden light. And this golden light I knew was an angelic form. And I knew that I could commune with this form, and I knew that this was golden angels, a collective of golden angels, and I knew they were here to help me. I just knew that. I knew I could get information, and there was a kind of swapping suggests I was giving them information. No, they were giving me information about what was happening and giving me a clear idea that I was looked after. They told me I would have three scans. One was the terrible news, second one improved, third one, I was great and healed. So they gave me this important information, which allowed me to feel really calm through the whole process because I believed what they said. And the thing is, I started telling people, oh yeah, I had these angels come to me. And I was acting before I got ill, just immediately before I was diagnosed, I was very hyper. I was acting strangely. I was talking very fast. And I organized, for example, a press conference from my bed. I had someone working with me, my assistant. I asked her to send out all these emails to 500 people around the world. There's going to be a big press conference in Ibiza at the Montesolo Hotel. Please come along. Susie's got a very important announcement to make, all of this. So I was full on. And so people were thinking, oh my God, she's really lost it now. She's gone mental, bless her, and we've got to look after her mental case. So I started telling people about the angels that came, and eyes would roll out and they go, oh no, you know, she's really lost it now. So I learned very quickly to zip it and not talk about angels. I had this understanding that if I started telling people what I was seeing and what was happening, I would be escorted to a psychiatric unit faster than anything and subdued, given heavy medication. And maybe they just lock me up and they throw away the key and I won't get out. So I thought, not a good strategy. So I learned that all the things that I was going through, not to share with anybody. So I kept it to myself for a long time. And it's only now. And I had a very successful career. I wasn't like a crazy hippie. Like there are many in Ibiza, crazy hippies just talking about all sorts of crazy things and people will go, oh, they're the hippies. I was not a hippie. I'd had a very successful career, done really well. run businesses and had a great stellar career. So it wasn't easy to label me as a crazy person because of my background, but I was being labeled a crazy person while I was in hospital. So I kind of had to mute that. And I learned, don't tell your story. Just don't. There'll be a time when you can, but this is not the time.
And this whole frequency thing that you're talking about, I imagine you've gotten in tune enough to realize, okay, here's a safe space to talk about it. Here is not, based on what you're feeling there. Is that the case?
Yeah. And I now talk about it a lot more. For example, a woman I just met this morning, I mentioned in the cafe over ordering a drink, I had told her my story and I knew it was okay to do so. I've learned, I think maybe things have changed in this period of that has gone on. The world is waking up a little bit more. But also I've got enough runway between now and then to feel powerful enough to share stories that I feel I might get heavily judged on. And I felt for a long time that I would get really judged when I start talking about this, because that happened when it first happened. I was judged heavily. I didn't want to be judged. So it's taken a lot of courage, a lot of reading of books, talking to people. Raymond Moody, I adore, for example, who's done so many studies on all of this. When he started telling me about the extent of the studies and just how many people have had this experience, this gave me great encouragement. I thought, yeah, great. And I know that the reason that I've been through this is because I need to share the story with others. I want people to be optimistic about what happens when you die, because it's a very beautiful thing. We can't possibly understand the nature of the universe as human beings living a life. We can't understand the depth and the width and the beauty and the magicalness of what being a human being is, what consciousness is, the magic of life, the synchronicities that happen. Just this week, since we're on the turn of the year, I've been noticing on purpose synchronicities. Yesterday, I counted 10 just in one day of things that happened that were just crazily brilliant. My son is looking for an apartment in Amsterdam. I was chatting to someone in a cafe and they just out of nowhere said, I've got an apartment in Amsterdam that I'm looking to find someone for. And they just met half an hour ago and it's all great. You know, this kind of synchronicity that is magical and just noticing all these things is part of the wonder of all of this and sharing the magic of life. How fun is that?
And it's part of gratitude also, is realizing all those things so that we can be grateful for them. All right, two more questions before I let you go. Number one, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your fear of death?
0. I have no fear. No fear. Because I know how beautiful it is. And it's an inevitability. We are meant to live, learn, grow, have fun, and die. That's how we're built. So the fact that I've experienced a little tip of the iceberg of death, and I can see that it's glorious. If someone says to me, I'm losing someone in my family, or I've just lost someone, or I get many people come to me who are cancer patients. I had one this week, a beautiful guy came and said he's just been given a very short duration. And I told him my story and it helped him. It's a wonderful thing to live life, to learn lessons, and then to elegantly just leave the body, and then you have freedom. It's a beautiful thing.
That's beautiful. A lot of people have not felt the bliss and unconditional love that you mentioned. Would you please dive into that a little bit more and put it in terms that maybe we can relate to? What did it really feel like?
Feeling unconditional love, it's a very unique and special effect. And like all of these big concepts that we're discussing here, words hardly do it justice. So I can only talk in terms of words that I have in my vocabulary and emotions that I have in my catalog of emotions. So I can describe it as beautiful, being in love with oneself and in love with our relationship with the earth and the planet, which my interest in planet and climate change and everything is. I am now on the board of a very brilliant planet organization to help with climate change because I care. And that love for the planet and my relationship to the planet has just developed so strongly now. So I feel like it's explaining what unconditional love is like and what the death past the body and in this realm of everything and nothingness. It's very hard because we haven't got any reference points to compare it to. So all I can say is it gives you the emotions that we are all looking for, which is connection, being part of something wonderful, and of feeling loved. And this to me is a heavenly state in itself.
Susie, thank you so much for being with me today. It's been inspirational. I appreciate it.
Eric, thank you so much. And thank you for everyone who listens to this. And I just want to complete with a few things, which is if you know people who are dying or you have people around you who are dying, or indeed you feel like you are on the way, there is nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear. It is a destiny that we are all, as living human beings, will head to at some point, today, tomorrow, or in very many years, doesn't matter. There's nothing to fear. I think in our communities and our culture, culturally, we've coded it incorrectly. We've encoded it as a dreadful thing. It's actually a wonderful thing. So I just invite, the invitation is there for people to see, is to reframe death, to see it quite differently, and to see it as a release and an entry into the godly world of heaven, let's call it. These are words that are attributed often in religious contexts. I'm not talking about religion. It's talking about a concept of a wonderful place that we go to when we leave our bodies. And I would encourage anyone to lose fear of death. There's nothing to worry about. Eric, thank you so much for having me on. I have just loved chatting to you.
Thanks again for listening and sharing this podcast. Don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button and sign up for our newsletter at roundtripdeath.com. If you want to share your near-death experience, or if you have questions or comments about the show, send an email to eric@roundtripdeath.com. Until then, I wish you everything good that you're looking for in this life and the next.